All right, I'm super stoked to bring this episode to you today. We are talking to Brian Davis, who's a materials and process engineer at Blue Origin. He's a packaging designer, packaging engineer. He came from MSU. He started in a totally different area of education, then chose packaging when he realized he didn't really love what he was doing. And now he's like in love with packaging. Not only that, he's working at Blue Origin. So he's packaging the rockets that are going into space. We get into like just the overall, there's just the sheer size and complexity of packaging something that isn't going on a store shelf, and you're not trying to sell more shampoo, more, you know, more socks. You know, you're not trying to sell anything to anybody. You're just actually trying to package and protect something as complex as replacement for the International Space Station, and how to transport that. So super nuts. Just the sheer scale of it is crazy. But we get into like his story, you know, his time at MSU, being a walk-on at MSU in football. I don't know what that meant, but I know what it means now, and it's super impressive. Not only that, I just, as I went through and edited this episode, I couldn't stop smiling because Brian is such a great storyteller, and his stories are definitely amazing to listen to. We're not doing any ads in this episode. The entire episode is brought to you by idpdirect.com, Factory Direct Packaging Manufacturer, specright.com, Specifications Management, and Packdora die line creation tool. That's it in terms of ad reads. They're amazing in terms of sponsors, but we're going to go ahead and go right into the show because it is so good. Do me a favor, do find Brian on LinkedIn. Links are in the show notes. Connect with him and tell him what a great episode this was, because this has got to be like my favorite episode ever. Thank you guys so much for watching. Thank you so much for listening. Do me a favor, head on over to YouTube and click subscribe and comment in YouTube how amazing Brian is as a person and as a packaging designer. And any questions you have on just the volume and size of what he's doing, please put them in the comments. I'll make sure that he gets them and we answer them for you as quickly as possible. All right, let's get to the show with Brian Davis. You're going to love it. You ready? You pumped?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Yeah. All right. Awesome. All right. So we got Brian Davis today, and Brian Davis is a materials and processing engineer at Blue Origin. Brian, thank you so much for being on, man. How you doing?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
You're in Florida. Rockets launch from Florida all the time, man. And you're with Blue Origin. So how, like, what got you into packaging first? And then how did you get to Blue Origin?
All right. Well, so kind of a long story, but so I originally started off in electrical engineering and hated it. It was not for me. I had a buddy of mine who was also on a similar path, and he told me about this thing called packaging that was at Michigan State, and that supposedly we were number one in the country for it. So I had no idea what packaging was before going to Michigan State. So it just happened to be a coincidence that we were the school of choice for packaging. So, mm-hmm. You know, he told me about it and sounded kind of interesting. I didn't like where I was going in electrical engineering, so I went and talked to my academic advisor and ended up switching my major the next day. And haven't looked back since. Hit the ground running. Loved everything about it. Being in electrical engineering those first couple of years kind of took me the long way of getting my degree, but eventually finished. And my first job was in Florida. So I've been down here for about 18 years now. And my last company I worked for was in the electrification industry. And they were a pretty big company and were buying up companies left and right. So every quarter they would do, you know, layoffs because of the merger. And I was eventually affected by that. So I was hanging out with a buddy of mine. In fact, it was an old football teammate. And he and I were on a double date at a comedy show. And I made a joke like, why is the person that's unemployed paying for the tickets. And he laughed. He's like, oh, I didn't know you were unemployed, man. You should check out my company. So he worked for Blue Origin as a technical trainer, training developer. And I'm thinking to myself, like, maybe he doesn't know what type of engineering I do. I don't think they need a packaging engineer at a rocket company. So, you know, lo and behold, like 3 months had gone past. And I was like, hey, man, what was the name of that company you worked for again? And so he said Blue Origin. So I got online and looked, and sure enough, they were looking for a packaging engineer for a logistics team. So, you know, the rest is history. I've been at Blue Origin for about 3 years now. I'm one of maybe five packaging engineers we have on our corporate logistics team. And, you know, we basically handle the custom containers for our hardware, flight hardware, and different components and sub-assemblies for the rocket that we ship from site to site and between suppliers to get tested. So that's pretty much what I do on a daily basis now. And I love it.
Wow, man, that's crazy. I was like, where does packaging play a role at spaceship company, right?
right. You'd be surprised. I thought the same thing myself. So when I first started, I had a bit of imposter syndrome. I'm like, well, you know, what am I doing here with all of these rocket scientists and aerospace engineers? But you'd be surprised that people that are designing a rocket to fly into space have no clue how to get it from point A to point B on Earth without damaging it. So that's where I come into play.
Give me an example. Like, what components are you moving, and like, how are you packing it? Like, what materials are you using?
So we have four major programs. So we've got the New Shepard rocket, which is basically our suborbital space tourism rocket that you probably have heard about that's making all of the headlines in the news. I think Michael Strahan was probably our most famous customer today, as far along with William Shatner as well. So you may have heard of those flights. We have the New Glenn program, which is still kind of underway. It's going to be launching from here in Florida on the Space Coast. It's basically the competitor to the major launch players right now, like your SpaceX, ULA. Then speaking of ULA, so we have our engines department, which builds all of our engines for our vehicles and for the Vulcan rocket for ULA. So we sell them our engines as well, our BE-4 engines. And then lastly, we have what's called our advanced development programs, or ADP for short. And that's basically everything else. So the lunar lander, the Orbital Reef, which is going to be the successor to the ISS. So those sorts of things. And so we service all of those programs. So we package everything from little small, like, components for the engine that we might fit in, like, a handheld Pelican case, for example. So parts of that small all the way up into barrel panels for the big New Glenn rocket, which is going to be 7 meters in diameter, which is about 23 feet. So everything that ships on that is an oversized load. You have to have escorts. It's taking up two lanes of traffic. So I've built some pretty big containers for those as well. And then some of the things that we ship are too big to even ship across the road because it's so tall. It won't fit underneath, like, the power lines or overpasses. So we have to fly it on, like, these super huge airplanes to get it from point A to point B. And I also help design and build, well, not build, but design those containers to be constructed as well. So it's pretty interesting stuff. And it's
nuts, man.
A whole range of assemblies. So
see, man, I feel like super small. It's like, oh man, I'm making, check out this cool little box, you know, like a little paper box.
It's got a pretty big coolness factor, you know? So, I have to keep that in mind, you know, when considering my options, like, man, it's pretty cool to work here every day. So,
man, that's crazy. So, like, all right, so, like, let's talk about, like, one of those big giant panels, right? It's 23 feet across. It's not just like a sheet of metal. Like, there's actual electronics and components and everything built into this thing. So when it's shipping, you have to protect all these little touch points. Like how do you
how do you build something to withstand just the extreme conditions of just transport on something like that that can have some really delicate components?
Good question. So, it's pretty interesting. Like these big flight panels, they're so big that they have to break them into different sections. And, like I said, some of these parts at the widest point, it's like 23 feet wide. So we have to break them down into sections that'll fit on a flatbed truck. And, the freight cost alone could be upwards of like $50,000 per part. And we're talking about, there's eight sections to make the entire circumference of the barrel. So it could get quite costly shipping them, across the interstate. Depending on the size, we can only ship certain times a day. Or we have to have like police escorts, all kinds of permits, you name it. So, in order to cut down on costs, one of the directives I was given was to try to make these containers collapsible and reusable so that we aren't shipping a big full-size container when it's empty to go back.
Yeah.
So one of the design elements I implemented was to make these big, like 23 feet wide by maybe 10 to 12 feet long containers break down into sections so that way when we're shipping empty, we can stack them on top of a flatbed and there'll be a legal size load, meaning 8.5 feet wide. So they break down into 8-foot sections and stack up on the truck. That way, when it's empty, it doesn't cost us anything more than a regular flatbed load. So that's one of the things that I have to keep in mind when designing these things. And also, as you can imagine, like weight is a big factor. So just trying to have some kind of a structural element to make sure that it can sustain these type of travel conditions and not like transfer too many, G's to these parts because some of the avionics and whatnot are quite sensitive. But
they're gonna experience some serious G's in flight, right?
Yes, exactly. I was just about to say that. Yeah, nothing's gonna compare to what it's gonna experience when it's launching. So we're kind of safe mostly in that regard.
I still can't picture, right? I'm picturing a container, like a sea container, right? Mm-hmm. It's a metal rectangular tube, essentially. And then like when the part goes in there, like, is there foam? I'm trying to translate what I do, at small scale, a pack of mouse with like a molded fiber or foam insert into like this giant panel, like, or is it just like a big panel that's just strapped down in this thing that's built specifically for it?
Sometimes we use a metal interface where we can like bolt the parts, and keep them fixed in a fixed position inside the container. But ordinarily we use like, kind of like a thick neoprene type of rubber, in between like a cradle for the barrel panels. We'll layer the cradles with like neoprene, maybe one inch thick. And that pretty much does the trick. Most of our parts are aluminum. So, I mean, they hold up pretty well. And we also have to consider like corrosion. So that's a big thing, making sure we have the appropriate amount of desiccant and whatnot to kind of absorb any moisture. Because moisture sensitivity pretty much affects most of our avionic parts and everything. So,
yeah, especially in Florida. Right?
Yeah, you bet. And then we also have to ship a lot of things by barge as well. So, that salt water, like you mentioned in Florida, it becomes a big factor. When we do tests, we have to ship up to the testing facility up in Ohio. So, we're going all the way through Canada and coming in to Lake Erie to offload these things by barge. And, some of these things are so wide, getting on these back roads to get to these testing facilities. Like our logistics team has had to travel with chainsaws to cut down people's mailbox because they're hitting the mailboxes as they're trying to get through these little two-lane roads.
Yeah.
So it's quite the endeavor, but they get clever. Like on the last barge trip we had to do a makeshift garage where they stacked up a bunch of sea containers and put like an awning over them. And we kind of drove the payload ferry containers inside of those. And that's kind of what protected it because there's nothing that exists for this type of stuff, you know, you can utilize. Dude, so,
oh, that's crazy. So, all right. So you're building the packaging, right? And packaging, like the term packaging sounds like so small for what you're doing, right? It's like packaging is like a shoebox, right? But, but no, you're packaging these huge pieces of equipment. To move them around. And it's funny, cause like, I remember, I was at Tesla, which is like shares the parking lot to SpaceX, right? Like the SpaceX warehouse, the doors are wide open. You can see the big giant rockets in there. And I remember parking my car, going to the Tesla office, and here comes a big flatbed with a huge ring for a rocket on it. And it's like going right past my car. I'm like, it's like one, the ring itself on the outside looked beautiful. Like there's, you know, all the graphics, and everything on there. And then just all the componentry that was hanging on the inside of it was insane. So I can just imagine like the size of these panels that you're working on are massive, like, you know, beyond what you typically think of when you're packaging something. Yeah. So how do you go from, you know, developing packaging that you were doing in the past to now thinking in such a big scale? Right? It's gotta be a huge difference.
It is huge. And it still amazes me, you know, when I get stuck behind one of our panel transports or barrel transports in the morning on the way into work. You just see this huge thing coming down the road that's like taller than the street size. we've actually had to have street crews move the traffic signals and everything for us as well to get this thing down the road. So yeah, it's quite mind blowing. Our new Glenn rocket is the size of a football field from goalpost to goalpost when it's horizontal. Wow. So you can just imagine standing next to this thing, you feel very tiny. And so, during my interview for Blue Origin, my manager asked me, and at the time I thought it was a weird question, but he was like, "What's the largest thing you've ever packaged before?" And I'm thinking like, all right, that's an odd question, but I can see why he asked me that, because like you said, it's quite the transition going from everything I've known in my career to packaging something on this grand of scale. And, you know, I want to say it probably took a good 3 to 6 months to kind of like finally, you know, wrap my mind around the magnitude and like what it involves just to move this hardware. So, I mean, there isn't like, I can't really spell out like a, you know, a process that I go through. It's kind of like, hey, go package this 23-foot diameter ring that connects two barrel sections together. And it's like, okay, like, where do you start at? You know,
you're not going to Pinterest looking for inspiration, right?
right. So, you know, our team at Blue Origin is great. Like, we have a lot of experience. When I say experience, I mean like the aerospace engineers, like they have quite the extensive background, and you know, they've got some ideas about what they like, what direction they want to go in, and it's basically up to me to be like, hey, this will work or this won't work, or you know, I understand you want to try this, but maybe we should consider this instead. So that's been quite helpful. I was the very first packaging engineer we hired at Blue Origin. So like there was no framework in place, you know, when I got there, it's all kind of been like, hey, you write the standards for what we need to do as a company. And you guys, set up these guidelines and whatnot. So, we don't have anything to pull from, basically. It's just a bunch of us kind of pulling our knowledge together and say, hey, this will work. Now, luckily, you know, everything that we've designed has functioned as intended. The only time we see any damage is usually it's when the supplier has been in charge of the packaging or like we aren't consulted and people try to, you know, do it without us, so to speak. Yeah. But, you know, I think our background is pretty solid. We have a good foundation to build on, just knowing like what materials are out there, what exists out there in the industry. It definitely helps out a lot.
Wow. And so just thinking like just what you're doing now with your containers, with the fact that you've built a container that breaks down, collapses flat, takes up, I'm sure, you know, like a quarter of what it would as an assembled container at least. Is that going to be widely available? Like I'm just picturing, you know, all these container ships that are coming over stacked, you know, 30 containers tall. Like, why aren't we doing that in that case? Right. Like, you know, it would reduce the amount of it would just help reduce carbon footprint overall because we'd be shipping less stuff back, back and forth.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, I think they may have some, I've seen some collapsible sea containers mm-hmm. before. I don't know how widely they're used or how available they are. But they do exist. So I don't think we're too innovative in that regard. I don't want to take too much credit for
it. No, come on, man. I was like, Brian, hook this up.
But as far as what we do in aerospace, I mean, everything is basically custom. So I don't know if you'll see, you know, our designs out there widely available. You know, our rocket is pretty unique. It's going to be the biggest one behind the Saturn V. You know, by comparison, the Falcon rocket from SpaceX is about 5 meters in diameter. So, I mean, we're talking, this is pretty big. So I don't know if it'll be something that'll be commercialized or anything soon, but it's definitely a concept that you can leverage in other industries, I'd say.
So how's that feel to like see, you know, a component that you've worked on in terms of, you know, moving it around and I'm sure you're getting some hands-on with some of this equipment, right? And then to see this stuff taken off, like that's gotta be pretty cool, right? It's like,
yeah. So like, you know, when I first started, I would get these packaging requests for certain sub assemblies and I had no idea what this thing was, you know, and once you start seeing everything come together and you start seeing the rocket being assembled, you're like, oh, okay. So that's what that was for. And that attaches to that. And now I see how this plays a role into the big picture. So it's very fulfilling. In fact, it's probably one of the most rewarding positions I've held in my career because our mission at Blue Origin is, you know, to enable millions of people to live and work in space for the benefit of Earth. So to be able to build something that's going to be a road to space to help generations to come behind us, it's very rewarding. And it actually like makes me feel like I have a sense and a purpose in this world. And like, I'm not just, you know, packaging random things for random companies. Like there's a reason why we're doing this. There's a purpose for it. And it's fulfilling work. So it makes me feel great.
Yeah. You're not trying to sell more shampoo with a new bottle.
Right. Not saying anything is wrong with that.
Yeah. Nothing wrong with that, but you know, it's a little bit bigger than
exactly.
That's cool, man. And then so I had some other questions, man, because I didn't have any idea like what you were working on. So do you design anything for like in cabin type of products?
Not exactly. I have made containers to fit the crew capsule seats.
Okay.
So the individual seats. And in fact, our marketing team has started to sell, seats as kind of like to the, some of our astronauts have requested to like purchase one of the seats that has gone into space. So yeah. I've had to design some containers to ship our crew capsule seats back and forth. So that's one thing. And then we have a, like an engineering mock-up of the crew capsule, as well as a marketing mock-up of the crew capsule. And, so the engineering mock-up is used for testing purposes and whatnot, mm-hmm. and to get the astronauts prepared for flight. That breaks down and I've designed containers to ship each segment in. So it breaks into three different sections. So I've built containers to ship those sections. And then the same thing for the marketing one that goes around to the different shows, like trade shows and, sure. you know, big events, and you can get inside and take pictures and whatnot. So that has to ship, you know, across the road to get to each different show. In fact, I think we had one in Paris that it had to go to. So those containers get pretty beat up because they're used regularly. And so I've had to redesign those containers as well. So, I mean, I guess that is, I guess that counts.
So have you been in the marketing capsule?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Have you been in the engineering one?
I have not been in that one. It's funny because I kind of had to design that one, remotely, which is strange, but, a lot of times, you know, we've had engineering designs, so they'll send me the CAD model and I just basically design around it. So I haven't been in that one, even though I've designed the containers for it, but I have been in the marketing one a few times. So it's pretty cool. It's really cool seeing the people's faces, you know, when they get to go inside of it and just like be a part of that whole experience. Like I like to see the joy, and I'm not just kids, but adults as well. Like it's pretty cool stuff. So
would you go up into space if you had the chance?
Funny you ask. So ordinarily, like I would consider myself claustrophobic, right? So like I know the space is tight. Like I think ours has about 6 seats in it, and it's enough room for people to float around and experience that weightlessness feeling, and do flips even. But it's not a whole lot of space, and like I'm the type that I get motion sickness. In fact, we just went to Disney last week, and I almost got sick on one of the rides. So I don't know if I would be the prime candidate, but I would love the opportunity to go. And I used to tell people, like, back when we had only did 4 flights, I said we sent 2 employees up out of those first 4 flights. So I said, you know, that's a 50% chance. You know, it's good odds that I might get a chance to go one of these days. But my wife, she would have none of that if it was up to her.
She'll just stay down here.
Yeah. She wants me to stay grounded. But no, I would love to get a chance to go one day, and I hope to have that opportunity one day.
That's cool, man. So if you're listening, Mr. Bezos, you know,
right?
That's right. That's cool, man. So like your packaging doesn't make it up into space, right? Or no. I guess does some of it go? Cause like as you're building out this new reef.
Yeah, no, actually, my context would be considered ground design.
Okay.
So the flight design has a different parameters, different governing factors. And, you know, that's not really in our scope.
So okay.
Everything we design is strictly for ground use only.
Cool. And then like, what about like, so, you know, typical packaging, right? You've got regulations on information that has to be on the pack and all that stuff. What kind of graphics, like what is technically required on some of this pack that you're working on?
That's a good question. So, you know, pretty much most of the components relating to the rocket is considered hazmat because it falls under the explosives category. A lot of our different functions use ordnance to kind of generate that separation between stages and, you know, for the payload fairings to separate when it's in space, it all uses ordnance. So a lot of hazmat regulations would apply. So typical hazmat placards and markings on our containers. Our fuel, if you will, is liquid hydrogen, liquid nitrogen, and liquid oxygen. So a lot of the residual from that is hydrogen peroxide. So, some of those different, I think this class 2 hazmat regulations apply to some of our containers and whatnot. But other than that, nothing special. We try to keep it, low key. You know, we don't want to advertise too much. Obviously, when you got something that's 23 feet wide, it's hard to miss. But generally, like things that are pallet size or, you know, going on the truck LTL, we try to minimize advertising that it's Blue Origin components because, you know, it's all like ITAR regulated, has to be export controlled and everything. So we want to keep it proprietary and top secret, hush hush, you know. So.
Yeah. So it's my dogs are barking in the background. You know, kids are on home from a school holiday.
Yeah.
So it's like craziness back there. So talking about like top secret, like do you have top secret clearance on some of this stuff? Like,
no, I don't actually. I don't have any sort of government clearance or everything. We are heavily government regulated, but it's not a requirement for my role. So,
man, you're developing massive packaging for, you know, these huge panels, some really cool stuff with, you know, Blue Origin. What is the coolest thing that you've packaged in your career?
So far, I think it would probably have to be one of the earlier iterations of our lunar lander. So the original version was called Blue Moon, and it's pretty big vessel. So the cool thing about it was that it was too big to travel across the road. So we had to get this thing from Washington State on the East Coast where it's being developed. On the West Coast where it's been developed over to the East Coast to be tested. And we can't travel over the road with it. So we had to figure out a way to get it there, which involved using either the Beluga plane, which is only, I think, five of those, or the Super Guppy, of which NASA owns two. So not only did we have to consider what type of container we could fit this thing in, or what kind of, you know, transport fixture, but we have to make that integrate with one of these super huge planes. So that was quite challenging. And, you know, we had a second iteration of that when we were bidding on the HLS contract, and we actually made a prototype of it. Now, let me remind you that the gravity on the moon is like six times less what it is on Earth. So the expensive part about getting into space is you know, taking the fuel to space with us from Earth. And the challenging part is overcoming Earth's gravity. So we designed these vessels to be, you know, pretty agile and light as possible. So the lunar lander, the legs are so skinny that it can't even hold its weight on Earth.
Oh, wow.
And the feet are so small, they're like the size of dinner plates. So, you know, we want to make it as light as possible because, you know, the heavier it is, the more expensive, obviously, it's going to be to get there. So it has to sit on a stand on Earth because it's not strong enough to hold its own weight with the Earth's gravity. And as you can imagine, while it's on a stand, it makes it taller. So now we have to invert it, break it over to horizontal position to try to ship it. And so, you know, those are some of the challenging things that that come up, you know, working for a company like Blue Origin and trying to package, you know, these huge vessels. So I think working on the lunar lander project was probably the coolest thing so far.
So then, you're tasked with packaging an item that is too fragile to deal with Earth's gravity. So you've got to support it, and not just from the base. I'm sure there's other structural areas you got to support, right? Because then you don't want different areas to collapse. So how do you package that on the shuttle, right? Because that takeoff, that, you know, the G's that are coming onto that lander is even worse. Are you involved in the packaging of it, that where it goes on the actual shuttle too?
No, that's not me. That's a different team. So once we've got everything built and designed, there's an integration team that figures out how to fix it in place inside of the payload fairing. It will attach to the fixed adapter, and then it'll be deployed in space. So
got it. Is that,
you know, anchor points or whatever where it attaches down to.
And then when you're doing it, what did you guys end up using? Did you end up using the Beluga or How did you transport that? How did you transport?
So in the aerospace industry, you have to be agile, both literally and figuratively. And there's a lot of pivoting. So that original concept we've pivoted away from that a couple of times now. And so that was just the concept state of trying to figure out if we can even do it, like if it's even possible. And then if it is possible, here's what you have to try to do. Make something fit this huge thing inside of it and be able to integrate with one of these airplanes. So, you know, you have to figure out how to make it work with our hardware. And then how do you make it work with the transportation, you know, vehicle that it's going inside of? So it's kind of a twofold challenge.
Yeah. That's cool, man. That's really cool. And then I guess the last question I got here is, you know, there's Blue Origin, there's SpaceX, and there's NASA, and you know, there's all these different companies that are kind of not coming up. NASA's been around forever, but is it super competitive in this space, or is there any kind of like, you know, camaraderie here? You know, is there a packaging designer on some of these other teams that you reach out to, or
it's like, no, we're going to be first. Question. I'm glad you asked that, because I was wondering if I was going to be able to work this into this interview somehow. And this is the great segue into that. So in terms of competitiveness, so there's this event each year on the Space Coast called the Space Coast Games. And it's kind of like the Olympics of the aerospace companies. So we've got about, you know, half a dozen or a dozen aerospace companies that come together each year, and we compete in these events. And it's anything from like dodgeball to space trivia to human battleship, you know, you name it, ultimate frisbee. So I was the captain of the tug of war team. Now, the last time we competed in these games, which was before COVID, we won pretty handily. The tug of war events. People were accused of
those. You're big dude. You are the tug of war team, man.
So people were accused of having people that didn't even work for Blue Origin on our team. And we're like, no, everyone works here. So each year the host rotates. And this past year, the event was earlier in December. This past year, L3 Harris was the host. And which is one of the teams that we literally drugged the last time. And they conveniently forgot to put tug of war on the schedule. So it was a last minute addition. And once it was added, it was determined that it was too late to be factored into the total team score. So it would only count if there was an overall tie. So, you know, we competed in the event. We beat everybody again. And, but that was it, because it wasn't going to count officially. So we're at the award ceremony and they're tallying up the points and, you know, announcing the winners, and they get to third place, which I think was either like Boeing or Lockheed, one of those teams. And then there's like, it was a tie between first and second place, which was Blue Origin and NASA. And so since it was a tie, the winner will be decided based on the results of tug of war. So not only did we win tug of war, but we also won the entire Space Coast Games because of tug of war being the tiebreaker. That's awesome. So, yeah, I mean, it gets pretty competitive if nowhere else than the Space Coast Games. But no, there's a lot of collaboration going on between companies. Like, we work with other companies often to develop different elements of the vehicle. So there's some camaraderie, but there's also some fun competition and some ways to kind of compete outside of the workplace as well. So I'm glad you asked.
You know, you were at MSU. You were talking about football. You're a big dude. So did you play at MSU?
Yeah. So funny. So yeah, so when I was a freshman at MSU, Nick Saban was still there. And I tried walking on that year, didn't quite make it, tried again the following year and walked on as a fullback. So I was a walk-on for a year, and it was a great experience. I honestly didn't think that I would make the team. So the day that they released the names, it was probably about 50 people trying out. And they probably only picked about 10 or 11 people out of those 50. And somebody I knew had made the team and was all excited. And I was like, hey, man, did you happen to see? Because I wasn't even going to check. I was like, yes.
Right. No.
I was like, did you happen to see Brian Davis on that list? And he was like, you know what? That looks familiar. I think I did. I'm like, look, man, don't play with my emotions, right? Like, don't have me go there and check it just to be disappointed. He's like, no, I'm serious. I think I saw your name. So I went to the football building and checked the little list of people who made it. And I must have read every name on that list 3 times. And I was like, yeah, that's my name. I'm number 8. Like, so it was probably one of the happiest days of my life. And I was so excited. But it was a lot of hard work to follow that.
Yeah.
But it was just happy to be part of that experience and to have that, that college experience was awesome.
That's cool. I'm not a big, football guy. Right? I'm not a big sports guy. So when you're talking about, you know, being a walk-on means that you didn't get brought into the team as like a, I don't know, you didn't get a scholarship in to school for football.
Yeah, so
you're studying and you were doing electrical engineering.
Right.
During this time.
And at the time, there's no history of MSU grads that had completed football and their degree in engineering. So like, I'm looking to be like a pioneer, so to speak, you know what I'm saying? But no, I didn't get recruited or anything like that. And that was another reason. That was another factor that kind of played into my disbelief that I would actually make the team, especially like a D1 Big Ten school. So it was a long shot for me. But being a walk-on means that you're basically on the practice squad and the band gets to travel to the away games, but you don't. So that kind of tells you the pecking order of things.
Yeah.
But just being there and being around those guys. And like at the time, our biggest athlete was TJ Duckett. If you remember him,
he was the running back. I don't know, man. Okay. I don't know anybody.
So just being around these guys and practice and like, seeing that these people, these larger than life figures are actually like throwing up in the trash can in practice. It's like, all right, it's, you know, it was kind of like the imposter syndrome I had at Blue Origin in the beginning. It's like, all right, yeah. Well, maybe I can't fit in here. You know, these guys are human. They're regular people just like me. So, so it was cool just being on the same field with some of this talent, you know,
it's just cool
having that whole experience. So yeah, it's pretty neat.
So how long did you play?
So I was only a walk-on at Michigan State my sophomore year. And then I played semi-pro football upon graduation in Michigan for a couple of years. And then I continued that semi-pro career down in Florida for the Orlando Rage. And played for them for about 10 years. We've got like 5 championships. So got some hardware and everything. But our biggest claim to fame came during the 2009 finals, NBA finals, when the Orlando Magic was playing the Los Angeles Lakers. And during halftime of one of the games, they did a feature story on Orlando's only dynasty. And our team, the Orlando Rage, was the only dynasty. I think we had like a 42 or 43 game winning streak over the course of 3 years. And so we were kind of a big deal locally, and it was cool. My brother, who lives in LA, called me and said, "Hey, I just saw your football team on the TNT during halftime." And I was like, "Oh, cool!" So that was as famous as I got, if you will. But
that's cool. So did you
great experience?
Did you play as a packaging student or just an engineering? Like, did you make that transition to packaging and were still on the team or no?
Trying to think. When did I
don't think
over?
There's ever been a packaging student playing football for anybody.
But there is one now. I just saw a newsletter, a Michigan State alumni newsletter, and we actually have a guy that's in packaging that's on the team now. I can't remember his name at the moment. I can pull it up after that.
Oh, man. I'd love to know who that is. That would be crazy.
And
I'd
have to have
my buddy Adam Peake do the interview with me because he's a sports guy. I am not.
Yeah. I was like, all right, cool, man. So this thing is getting bigger. But it's cool to see, you know, because back when I was in school in packaging, it was only a handful of schools that even had packaging as a major. So just to see how far it's come and how big it's gotten, how many more schools offer it now, you know, I'm glad to see that it's gaining popularity. People see that it's needed, that it's necessary. You know, they don't wait to the last minute. And that's one of the things that we were big on implementing at Blue Origin. You know, a lot of times, you know, everything in the aerospace industry is about schedule. And that schedule is always getting pushed back. And so a lot of times people, you know, develop all of these components and everything, and they don't think about packaging until it's ready to ship. And it's like, oh, hey, make a container for this that has to ship, you know, in a couple of days or in a couple of weeks. And it's like, you got to think about this ahead of time. Like, you guys got to factor packaging into the preliminary design review, and like, let's get on top of this thing. And they might design something that's too big to fit inside of a plane or too big to fit on the interstate. But if they had just shaved off 6 inches, then, you know, nah, it would have worked. But they didn't know that because now it's already designed and you didn't bring us into the picture to talk about this ahead of time. So that's probably the biggest impact we've made at the company, is kind of getting packaging involved sooner into the design stages of production.
And we deal with that at the small scale too, right? Where people create a website for a product, they have a product prototype and they're like, all right, we're launching in January. And, you know, they're calling the packaging people in December. It's like, well, you know, packaging takes 6 months to design, produce, and test. And all of a sudden they're like, oh, you know, it's packaging's fault that we're late to, you know, to market. But no, if you would have brought us in earlier, we would have hit the date. You know, packaging's pretty scheduled. You know how long it's going to take you to do whatever you're going to do. So you can, you know, you can build out a quick time and action calendar or something like that, man.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I think, dude, I learned a ton on here, like just the fact that of what you're building and what you're doing, and you never, you know, you see these rockets going up and down and you never go, oh man, packaging was involved in here, but if it wasn't for packaging, all the stuff couldn't come together to build the rocket, you know, to take off. So really you play the biggest role in at Blue Origin at the moment.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, when I was in high school in chemistry class, and my chemistry teacher had a saying that was, what in the world isn't chemistry? And I kind of feel that way about packaging. Like, what in the world doesn't involve packaging? You know, everything we touch, everything we utilize has involved packaging to some extent. So I'm glad to play a role in our mission and in this industry. And it's pretty exciting times.
Yeah. I do want to ask you, and I feel weird asking this. I always feel weird asking this because I wouldn't ask a white designer this. I don't know why, but I just wouldn't. Is why are there, where are all the black designers in packaging?
That's a good question. You know, I think part of it is, it's just visibility. You know, packaging is not, well, like I said earlier, it's gaining popularity. It's getting more visible, but I don't think it's widely known yet. And, you know, case in
point.
That's
like a career path, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, like for example, when I switched my major to packaging, and I was telling people that I switched my major from electrical engineering to packaging, and everyone was like, oh, so you want to work for UPS? And I'm like, that's not quite packaging. You're on the right track, but that's shipping. This is a little bit different. And so, you know, I mentioned earlier that it's not offered, or wasn't at the time offered, at a lot of different colleges and universities. And, that's a short list. And I think the list of HBCUs that offer it is probably even a shorter list than that. And so, I just don't think that it's something that's widely known in the black community, or something that's looked at as been a lucrative career path. You know, I hate to say it, but if it wasn't for my friend that introduced me to it, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today. You know, so it's just a matter of us packaging engineers and packaging professionals getting the word out there, and, you know, kind of being proactive and trying to mentor others, you know, to bring up the next generation to be more involved and to be more widely known, I think. And I think that's where it starts at.
What would be like a good first step beyond what's already happening to introduce this into, you know, just different cultures?
I'm glad you asked. So at my company, we have what's called, we call them business resource groups, but most companies call them employee resource groups, right? And so we have one that's geared towards African Americans, African and Caribbean culture called New Jackson. So everything in Blue Origin has new before it. So I told you New Shepherd was owed to Alan Shepherd. And then New Glenn was named after John Glenn. So our group New Jackson is named after Mary Jackson, who was one of the first black female mathematicians at NASA. You may remember her from the movie Hidden Figures. She was one of the people featured in there. So we have the New Jackson BRG at Blue Origin. And our mission is to kind of support the black community at Blue Origin, try to keep the retention, to be a resource to the black employees, to kind of mentor them along and basically give them something to relate to. You know, a lot of people don't see people that look like them on a regular basis. So we're kind of serve as a resource to kind of say, hey, you're not alone here. There's a whole community of us, you know, how can we support each other? So one of the initiatives of New Jackson is to go out to different conferences and trade shows and career fairs to kind of recruit, but not only just recruit, but to show these young up and coming black engineering students that, hey, you know, you can be a part of this industry. You know what I'm saying? Here's people that look like you that work here. Come be a part of the team. So one of the things that I like to do is put the word out there like, hey, you don't have to be an aerospace engineer to work for an aerospace company. There's people like me that have no history in aerospace, but here I am working at Blue Origin and I'm in front of you as a black packaging engineer at this aerospace company. So that's one of the ways that we're trying to put the word out there and to try to increase awareness that there's different paths, different routes you can take to be a part of this industry or to be involved in packaging just in general. Cause a lot of people don't, like I said, don't even know about it. So that's one of the things that I'm personally trying to do. And I think that's a good example, you know, of how we can increase awareness about packaging and blacks and packaging in general.
I'm an immigrant. You know, I got smuggled into this country as a kid, and you know, my kids are first generation. But you know, I kind of landed in packaging just by happenstance. You know, after the Marine Corps, it's like there was an opportunity to get into design. I was doing some illustration, and you know, like one thing led to another. But yeah, otherwise, I wouldn't have even thought that packaging was an opportunity to go. I always thought it was like, all right, design is visual. Like, all right, I'm gonna do web design. I'm gonna do, you know, logo branding. And it's like once I got into packaging, I'm like, oh, dude, forget all that stuff. Like, this is so cool. I get to work with hands and build stuff. And
the testing was the fun part.
Yeah. Man, prototyping and testing, that's the best part. After that, you're kind of like, you know, you get into the slog of manufacturing and timelines. But as we start to wrap up, man, is there anything you might want to, that you wanted to share that maybe we didn't get to?
I think we touched on pretty much everything that I wanted to touch base with. I think we covered it.
Awesome, man. Cool. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you, what's the best place for them to reach out to you?
You can find me on LinkedIn/DavisB15.
Perfect. And I'll have links to that in the show notes. So if anybody wants to get in contact with you and just learn more about Blue Origin, packaging, New Jackson, I mean, I think they should reach out to you because that's some pretty cool stuff you guys are working on.
Yeah, definitely. I stay pretty active on there. I know I'm getting old because LinkedIn is my number one social media platform these days. So